And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 13th, 2020. Only 2 days before what would have been tax day, which is now much delayed, huh? And that's good news for all procrastinators out there. Tax day is pushed back. Anyway, we are very happy to have with us today Jacob Miller, who is the conservative outreach fellow for the Citizens Climate Lobby. So the Citizens Climate Lobby is working to pass legislation that's market-based. Fee and dividend concepts float around the CCL a lot. But it has worked to substantial lengths to generate a bipartisan approach to climate change. And so we're happy to have Jacob. Jacob, welcome aboard.
Once again, thanks for having me. Good to be on.
Good to be here. So tell me, as I said, you're the conservative outreach fellow. Tell me, what does that mean? I'd like to hear more about the kinds of people you bump into, and what their feelings are about climate change, and the kinds of arguments that you use, probably cloaked. I'm sure that everything you say is sort of hidden in acceptable language, but tell me what it's like to try and convince people across this political divide we find ourselves with.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll give you a bit about my background, how that feeds into the first group of people, and then talk about the second group of people, which is more akin to what you mentioned. So I'm a sixth generation Kansan, born and raised. I was born on 15 acres of Kansa Flint Hills. I fell asleep to the rush of creek water, not the rush of traffic. First cousins, three times removed from Dwight D. Eisenhower, president of the 34th state from the 34th union with the 34th population. So
wow.
I'm proud to be an Eisenhower, and we can talk more about him. I've read way too many books and know too much. So there are a lot of moderate Republicans in Kansas. It's an odd mix of people. I mostly work with salt of the earth people in Kansas, very pragmatic folk. So a little bit about the history of Kansas. We're primarily Republican in our senators and Democrats at the state, local, and national level. Although we are the only state to have three female governors, all of whom have been Democrats. So
I'll have you know, great. Massachusetts, for all its blue heritage, has never had a woman governor. And so, good
for
Kansas.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, it's eclectic for sure. So yeah, I meet with a lot of farmers. I meet with a lot of young college Republicans. I meet with people in the city too. Eastern Kansas is primarily densely populated out in western Kansas. There's a lot of rural flight, so the fourth most moved from state because there's just not a lot of opportunities out there. So people move the small town communities and move out east or move out of the state completely. Mm-hmm. So that's something I run into. So a lot of those people come from places of already preserving and conserving a lot of their life and already having what Leopold would call a land ethic, maybe not in the sense he thought about it, but they're foremost, your agrarian Kansas farmers. The second group is the far right, and there are far right in Kansas. It kind of starts with Fox News, and it trickles on down. So in response to the Green New Deal, which is brought up a lot when you bring up the word climate, when you say the word climate, that tends to be talked about the most. Mm-hmm. So you hear a lot of this, it's just this communist liberal BS. And there are a lot of responses you can give to that. Instead of talking about the responses, I want to talk about the power of ideograph. So it's a set of rhetorical terms that illustrates partisan ideology, collective thought, or a system of ideals.
Ideograph, all right? An ideograph is what? Like a meme, an idea, a phrase that you use?
Yeah, it combines ideology and this mimetic sort of language, like graphics. So I have an environmental communication background. And whenever it's like a word association, like a word cloud or a word bubble, right?
Okay.
Whenever you say climate, for those on the far right in that category, however you want to define them, there is this collective thought or system of ideals. So you say climate, and suddenly in their head pops the images of Bernie, AOC, communists, granola munchers,
right.
People that want to, you know, come and take your guns away.
Right. Right.
I listened to hundreds and thousands of callers before this job as an intern for U.S. Senator Jerry Moran. And so I heard Kansans from both sides come on and speak. And you could tell who was succumbing to ideograph, because all of those words just came out in a jumbled mess rather than just, you know, one particular issue. So mm-hmm. there's different approaches for the first group that I've talked about, the more moderate, singular issue, and the second group, which is more ideographic.
Interesting. Okay. So with the, let's take the first, the pragmatic people that have a some form of land ethic, I think you said. I mean, what words, they don't have this sort of pre-programmed ideogram in their mind. What do you approach them with?
Yeah, so I approach them with the basics of our bill. They already know that they want to conserve water. Well, for instance, in western Kansas, one county will be out of water from the Ogallala Aquifer within 26 years. If they don't reduce their pumping,
mm-hmm.
or the floods that wiped off most of the farmland in 2019. So they feel the effects. Now it's just getting the words and the policy to support. So you don't want that. Support carbon pricing, support market innovation, mm-hmm. right? We liken it a lot to a good insurance policy. I mean, this is one of the best insurance policies right. you can have. So that's kind of the language we use there.
In those cases, you probably don't use any kind of inflammatory, dare I say, East Coast kind of climate change kind of words, because they're just, I mean, you don't even need to, right? People recognize that things, or would you agree that people recognize things are changing and they will come to it with their own sort of language?
Or
can you say climate change? I mean, is that just a word that scares people off, even among the pragmatic land ethic people?
Right. You know, that depends on the person, but I would say more often than not, it scares people off.
Right.
It's become so ideographic in terms. So that's why we say Carbon Pricing Energy Innovation Act.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any climate change in the title.
Right.
But, you know, I'm going to say it. I'm going to say climate change, because even if it's abstract, distant, not as immediate, people need to hear it. Because as the Oxford physics professor, Raymond something, he was a lead author of the IPCC report.
Okay.
He said, let's get this on the table right away without mincing words. It is time to panic. We, you know, there's a certain line we have to play of framing the issue and communicating what people are at, and then just saying the science as it is. So that's a tough line to do, right? Because in science, it's a little more objective. You have a certain set of rules and standards and precedents. But in language and humanities and social sciences, you know, what might work for one conservative doesn't for another.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, just playing in the complexities and subjective nature of things, it's tough.
You must have to take your victories one at a time, right? You get somebody to agree with you. That's a good thing, right? Because I would guess it's unlikely that you could walk into a room and have 100 people all agree with you at the end, right? You're
exactly.
working away person to person.
Right, exactly. And, you know, the groups that tend to get tribal, as you said in the last episode, tend to be the ones that are more polarized on the other end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So I volunteered for Extinction Rebellion
okay.
and Sunrise. So I was, still very unconcerned, but I didn't exactly like the way in which they approached. I think it was too ideographic, you know, in right. protests at the DNC headquarters about this one specific issue of DNC not allowing a climate-specific debate.
Right.
You had tons of people protesting on, like, the Keystone XL pipeline, on women's rights and indigenous. So all these things are necessary, but they're all lumped in, again, to this just leftist ideology. And if someone doesn't agree with one of those other ones, suddenly they don't feel part of the group.
Is that,
right?
The ideogram that you're talking about, is, of course, a risk that anyone has, left, right, or center, right? Everyone could walk around with this cloud of ideas in their head. And I think what you just said is that it's risky if someone has a problem with one of the multitude of words in your head, that does not disqualify the other person from being an ally, I think is the kind of thing you were just saying, right? Is that fair? Because I guess what I'm trying to do is that we on the green side also need to avoid having incoherent ideograms in our head of lots of words that make us mad and respond emotionally as opposed to having a thoughtful approach.
Absolutely. You nailed it right on the head. And that's one of the critiques, both moderate and right, of the Green New Deal, because it includes so many things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so sweeping that, if you don't agree with one of them or two of them, suddenly they all become linked together. So, for better or for worse, that tends to be the response.
Interesting. Very interesting. So tell me, tell me about the more polarized, I guess, Inhofe is from, not from Kansas, is he? No. Jim Inhofe?
No.
No, he's from Oklahoma. Right.
Oklahoma, right. Yeah.
But I mean, it must be difficult to talk to the more Rush Limbaugh, I guess I would say. I don't mean to be contemptuous or anything, right? But I mean, there's a side of the politics there that probably is very resistant to talking about anything near climate change, right?
Yes, there is. And with them, for people still in the denial stage or questioning whether it's human caused, sometimes you just have to bite the bullet and move on. Okay. I'm a little more focused now on a Republican leadership, because, again, I think the top down will ultimately be what we need. So McCarthy had a meeting in January. I'm sure you've talked about this or know this, where basically all the conservative House members got together and said, hey, we need to do something about climate, because younger conservatives are match Democrats in their concern about climate change, right? It's a pretty much a generational issue at this point. Mm-hmm. And so they said, listen, our younger constituents want something done. So what are we going to do? What came out of that was an initiative to plant more trees, to look at approaches to sequester carbon, things, in my opinion, that do not come close to what we need, but they're good first steps. So this is all to say that even if there are still the red blood Republicans, you're still going to have, we're still making progress.
Right.
And I think we can find hope in the progress that at least now in the House of Representatives, we are talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it was the million tree or the trillion tree project or something. I mean, that is sort of just a way to distract from the real issue, but at the same time, it represents a talking point that you could work with, right? You could at least talk about that with someone who is less sympathetic. Interesting stuff.
Absolutely. Because even as much as, so the things I think that are the real roadblocks, you can't always bring up. So we got to get some internal politics figured out, like the Chamber of Commerce flipped. You also got to get special interest in, fossil fuel money out. I mean, that's paramount. Upton Sinclair had a quotation once where he said, it is difficult to get people to understand something when their salary depends on them not understanding it. But you can't bring any of that up with that group of people. It's just, we don't have enough time in this world to talk with everyone, but I try to at least come from this shared place of understanding and, do what I'm not doing in this. I try not to talk a whole lot at the beginning, to ask a few questions with a nice tone, right? You don't want to come across as blah, 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 blah. You want to just nice and easy tone, find that common ground, and then propose something. There's a pattern of communication that everyone can use in every situation that it will be more beneficial.
So I could ask you, this is like, it sounds like an off the wall question, but how many brothers and sisters do you have? Are you an only child?
I have one brother who is becoming a biosystems engineer.
Interesting. Interesting. I mean, what flashed in my head is, you know, what? So I'm a middle child, right? I consider myself a peacemaker, right? Because you're just in a position where you're always mediating disputes, right?
We were more Cain and Abel.
Well, you put yourself in this position of like trying to mediate with people. I'm just saying, you know, what personality type gravitates to that? Interesting. I'll let you figure that. I think it's a noble thing that you're doing. I admire you very much. Yeah. It's not an easy job.
It's not my natural inclination, believe me. But yeah, I think everyone is better for learning it.
Super, super. Well, Jacob, we got to put it down there. Remind me again the website for CCL where people can read about the energy fee and dividend bill that you're promoting. Where should they go?
Yeah. You can go to citizensclimatelobby.org. Can I just make one more two-sentence pitch?
Absolutely. Sure, go ahead.
Okay. So talking about climate change is lonely and isolating, and depression and anxiety caused by it is real. I have it. It's hard to sleep. So I think you should talk to your doctor about climate change. I mean that jokingly and facetiously. So I was telling my fiance that I don't jump out of bed every morning and say, yeah, I want to talk about climate change today. But I don't choose my life's work. It chooses me.
Well, there you go. God bless you. Yeah, God bless you. So it's citizensclimatelobby.org, which is where Jacob is putting his heart and soul into doing the right thing in Kansas. I'd suggest you go there. You can find those links at the blog for this show. It'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can send an email to suggest even more ways that Jacob can maintain his calm as he faces this. send emails to podcast@massclimateaction.net and I will forward them to him. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using any of the modern podcast distribution apps. And particularly, you can go to Apple Podcasts and search for Massachusetts Climate Action. We pop up. It turns out there's a lot of shows that have climate in minute in their title. So you got to find the Massachusetts Climate Action one. I want to thank D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Jacob, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.